start. Always happy to be here. You know, I was telling people that this is the Google of academia. You can plug in all the food and all the coffee and you just do work. So, okay, so like, this is the real title of my talk, but it's work done with Peter Essay, who's right here, and Lampoy, who's faculty at Columbia. And clearly, you know, this guy through the trouble here is work in progress. Another thing about being invited to a conference is that it focuses your work, right? You know, you have to say something in the conference. So you actually work very hard in the past few weeks. So it's a lot of this, some of this, well, most of this work has been done in the past week or so. So it's clearly work in progress. Having said that, and I put this title up, the real title is that which why I didn't actually put it up, because if I put this up, nobody actually come to my talk. That's actually no Gaussianity, it's stochastic gravity pull effect. This guy's crazy. So my goal is to convince you that it's not that crazy. So okay. So I guess outline my talk. So why should we care? Right? We've always been thinking about Gaussianity, or the CMB, so why not? We talk about gravitational wave. And for many reasons, I'll try to convince you later that it's actually more interesting that way. And I'll talk about the right pattern of stochastic gravitational power spectrum. This is a review, just to give you give you a sense of the jargon, the notation, and a lot of these techniques that people use to try to get information out, essentially noise, is going to be useful when we actually construct a three-point estimators for a stochastic gravitational wave. And one warning is that gravitational wave people are sort of decoupled from the rest of us. So they invent all this notation, all this unit convention that noisy when the first time they try to do something. But okay, I'll try to give you a sense of what's going on. And then of course you want to ask, what can we see? Okay, what can we see? So it might be a little bit surprising, but okay, then I'll summarize. Okay, so Josh. Gravitational wave is the final frontier. If you have a gravitational wave detector, you have two targets. The one is the resolved sources. So say, for example, black hole merger that's right on your doorstep, and you point a detector right over there, and then you get strain information in real time. So this is time, and this is strain. Hope you can see this. And you get the waveform, and people spend many years and many trying to figure out how this waveform looks like. For example, black hole mergers, compact binaries, they will always have some characteristic waveform. But what we are interested in today is stochastic sources. And these are actually unresolved sources. So you have black hole mergers and compact binaries, but a lot of them. So they can give you some background. But since we are all interested in inflation, we always, when we talk about stochastic gravitational wave, and we usually talk about primordial gravitational wave, these are the initial conditions given to you by Alan Guth. What I'm talking about. But there are other sources, right? For example, like I say, unresolved astrophysical sources, you have lots of these compact binaries, you have supernova, you have all the other crap, like black hole mergers going around, and there are many of them. And if you cannot resolve them, they just look like noise. They're stochastic. Tangstoffson, we have other sources of gravitational wave like cosmological turbulence. If you have preheating, you have phase transitions, and all the other non-equilibrium process that's going on when the universe gets from end of inflation to now, this will generate a lot of all this stochastic gravitational wave. So, and then you have other physics, like string effects, new physics, all the other stuff that you just plug in here. So this is what we're interested in. And if you actually detect this stochastic gravitational wave, which one is it? What is the source? How do you know? How do you tell? Right. So this question has been bugging me for like years and years and years and years, years since I actually wrote a paper on preheating. So I think hopefully I've been making some progress in trying to figure this out and now telling you about this today. So okay. So
a stupid point. Are you going to say something about 2 degrees in the sky and correlations and stuff like that?
Pardon?
Are you going to say something about the fact that causal physics acts inside the horizon but outside?
I'm going to talk about non-Gaussianities. Okay, so unresolved sources equals stochastic gravitational waves, right? Why is it called stochastic? Well, they look just like noise. I'll give you an example how noisy they look like. And when you have things that look like noise, how do you characterize them? You cannot construct a waveform. So you characterize them by calculating correlation functions. Just like the CMB. CMB is basically random fluctuation, right? So how do you characterize it? You construct correlation functions. So, and here, this is SCMB, you can construct a power spectrum. And here comes the jargon from the gravitational wave people. You conventionally you characterize how strong the power spectrum is by the energy density. So here's the energy density inside gravitational wave divided by, oh, this is C, sorry, this is rho critical. So this is the critical energy density, and then you have omega GW, just the fractional energy hidden inside gravitational wave. And you can calculate what rho GW is by using this standard formula you get from code. And the in Fourier space, the power spectrum is just given to you like this. So you have a omega GW, which is scale invariant, it's for inflation. You have this f to the minus 3 factor here. And this what this is you know, you don't have to worry about what this is, all this inflation. But I want to point out is that given a constant omega GW, the higher the frequency, the harder to detect it. So this is just a fact of life. You're doing gravitational wave. You want lower frequency, and this will come back again and again and again. So okay. So here's just a plot that I grabbed from the website, the LIGO website, on what do we have now. So here's the gravitational wave amplitude, and here's frequency. And if you cannot see it, I'll blow out later. But I'm just going to give you a sense of all that crap between what we really want, which is inflationary gravitational wave, which stays here. And then you can see you have black hole mergers, you resolve galactic binaries, unresolved galactic binaries, neutron stars mergers, supernova core collapse. You have all this crap between our detector sensitivity and inflation. So the first thing you're going to detect is actually all this stuff. But eventually you're going to build super detector and eventually see this inflationary gravitational wave. But how can you resolve, how can you tell the difference, right? So okay, and then the start today, I'm going to try to convince you that you can actually try to do this, can do this. Okay.
Maybe it's the same question everyone has, but what else was in that frequency range?
Oh, just one question.
The reason we can tell the difference now is because we know what frequency range those other things come in.
Well, even this, we don't even know this actually. We actually have no solid models for all this stuff. These are just predictions.
But it's orders of some orders of different. I mean, I don't know, but to me it looks like.
It'd be like this thing?
Yeah, between the circles.
So I guess
no, this thing will go all the way down.
Well,
right?
I agree, it goes all the way down, but then that's.
You mean this place? Maybe the next plot will help. I'm going to show you the next plot. This plot makes more sense, actually. So this plot is the plot that gravitational wave people like to use, and this is the plot that cosmologists like to use. So the frequency range here is like, this is zero, and zero here is the Earth range. Now, you take the size of the Earth is about 1 hertz. Basically, it's the time needed to travel across the Earth, the circumference of the Earth. So you can think of it, it's kind of funny thing that okay, let me just take it back. Sorry, I'll come back to that. So this is a plot of the frequency range that we can ever see in gravitational wave, right? And I'm going to orient you, so because we're going to see this plot again and again. So on the y-axis is the omega GW, that's the energy density in gravitational wave. On the x-axis, when f is 10 to the minus 18 hertz, this is just a Hubble scale right now. So this is the biggest scale you can actually ever see. And here is the Planck scale, 10 to the 18. So from here to here is like 10 to the 36 orders of magnitude. And there's the range, there's the dynamic range that we can ever see. I always find interesting that that Earth is actually right in the middle. So maybe somebody will write an entropic paper, that's why we are in the middle. But it's important that why we're in the middle, because we are humans, right? We're gonna construct detectors. Our detectors are interferometers. It means that there's a physical size that we can actually construct. We cannot construct, for example, galaxy scale interferometers, right? Even Star Trek don't do that. So you're kind of forced to go just around like F star to 0.01, that's about the solar system scales. And to say this is LISA scale, this is LIGO, it's like 100 Hertz. LISA is about 0.01 to 0.001, and the BBO DeSilo, just some paper detector that people are thinking of building, is about 0.01 to 0.01 to 0.1, and the resonant mass is about 1,000 Hertz. But you can go smaller if you want, but it's hard to construct tiny interferometers. And that's, of course, you're from Stanford, so then they say, okay, I can do this atomic size interferometers. But okay, these are new technologies. But the point is that we are, right now, with current technologies, we are kind of like forced between this golden range. So this is all we can see, which is why here, although there's no crack here, we cannot go and probe below here. We are forced to kind of like stay within this range. This is for just kind of build instruments that go lower than this. So now we see all this crap here, and then we're going to hope to detect inflation in a gradual way. So yeah, I stop here. So how do you know? How do you tell? Right. So okay. So the question is that if we detect well, you know, how do we tell what the source is? One way, of course, if you have a sufficient dynamic range, is to tell by the shape of the spectra. Inflation is just a straight line. Right, if you have some sort of gravitational wave from preheating, as Clausen was talking about, those non-Euclidean processes actually generate lots and lots of gravitational wave. They can have magnitude that's bigger than inflation, but they have a spectral structure. They are not still invariant. On the other hand, you have stuff like unresolved cosmological binaries. For example, white dwarf would have a peak around 0.01. This is minus, all the minus here, so it's like 0.01 to 0.001 hertz. And it has the same structure.
But inflation is not a straight line.
It cuts off somewhere, yeah.
No, it could be anything.
It could be anything, right. But well, let's just be just simple and say that inflation.
I think about it's monotonic, probably. That's the only thing.
It is just monotonic. It could be that, yeah.
But other than that, it could be anything.
It could be anything, okay. Good. Well, you're just strengthening my case. I like it. So you have like neutron star, white dwarf, black, white. And I'm just showing you one of them. Yeah, for every single cosmological source or astrophysical source, you can construct any of this, and they all rise within this range. So okay, or you can distinguish by higher correlation functions, non-Gaussian RT or stochastic gravitational waves, right? And the lesson, if you can do this, not only you have information to be able to distinguish between all the spectra. They contain lesson from CMB is that they contain extra information. So now you're all sitting here and thinking, but is he crazy, right? So why am I talking about this? You haven't even detected a stochastic gravitational wave power spectrum yet. You're already thinking about non-Gaussian. So is he crazy? So I'll convince you by the end of the talk that it's not that crazy. In fact, the result was surprising to me. I actually did this as a warm-up to do something else, but then I find it's not that crazy. Okay, so since we are in the effective future.
I have a related question, which is a bit of a crazy question. Going back a couple of slides, mm-hmm. How close, the leak of previous
this one?
With those, that's the optimal world for this in LIGO, right?
Say again, sorry?
That's like the best case scenario.
For yeah, I think it's advanced LIGO actually, as well as LIGO is supposed to.
So how close are they actually getting to that band?
I'll show you a plot later.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
okay.
Is it orders of magnitude away?
They actually now, I think this is an old plot. I think they are now pushing the advanced LIGO. They can get down to, 10 to the minus 24, 23. I'll show you a plot later. I don't remember the exact number. But they're actually pushing down. We expect, or at least they expect from talking to people in LIGO, to optimistically see some stochastic gravitational wave from astrophysical sources within 5 years.
What have they actually achieved, though? Basically, how close are they to their optimal situation?
The optimal depends on which you're talking about, advanced LIGO, enhanced LIGO, correlation. It depends on what is the...
It's better than original optimal form.
I'll show you a plot, advanced LIGO plot. Depending on who you talk with, but okay. I'll show you a plot. In fact, this whole talk is all about noise, so I'm going to show you a lot of these noise plots. So, okay. So, is it crazy? Well, since we are in an effective future conference, I should show you some finite diagrams. So what are the sources of three-point correlations? Well, they are just high-order interactions. So you can write down these three possible interactions that have scalars and tensors in it. You have scalar tensor, so this is just gravitational Bremsstrom. The correlation is just zeta is just a scalar perturbation times h, so metric perturbation. And then you see Peter's, we'll talk about that later. And the next thing is, of course, the tensor scalar. This is our real goal, at least this is my real goal, is that can we actually find cross correlation between, say, BDT, the B mode temperature modes, or stochastic gravitational between 1 centimeter lines? So, this I was hoping to use this as a way to cross the scale. Some other talk. But okay, but this is my warm up. This is we want to do this, but first we have to understand how to do this first. Even though it's just an academic exercise. So this is just 3 points of the metric perturbation. So it's called non-Gaussian, it's a stochastic gravitational wave. There are 3 lakes, so each lake is h over m Planck, and there's interaction which is another h over m Planck. So the amplitude is about h over m Planck, about 4. So this is a tiny number. So can you actually see that? Okay, so with that aside, I mean, how do we actually detect stochastic gravitational wave power spectrum? So this is just now review, and a lot of these lessons will carry on to the 3 points. So it's nice to talk about it. So here's the two polarization modes of gravitational wave. You know, this is the plus mode, this is the cross mode. For a metric perturbation at point X and P, you can decompose it with these two modes. So here's the EIJ. A is just the index for polarization. You know, you have this Fourier transform, H, which is a function of angles and frequencies. And you integrate over all of them. So what your detector sees is this. But, you know, I can have this. The detector sees this, but you have, in a sense, no directional information. You're integrating over all directions of all frequencies. So here we go. Let me assume isotropic. So now here's your detector. Here's this interferometer. This is LIGO. You fire a laser here, and you have a beam splitter. It goes up and goes up here, and it comes back. And if a gravitational wave goes through this, it stretches the distance between these two arms. And when it comes back and your photodetector detects them, you see some phase difference. So you know, you can imagine that a wave coming through here, a wave coming through here, give you a different response, right? So then each detector has some sort of a detector pattern tensor. Depending on which direction and which polarization the wave, the gravitational wave, it give you a different response. And every time you see this, every time you see this F of A of omega, it's just some detector pattern. It's given to you by the people who build the detectors. Well, now you are a scientist here, sitting here and looking at the results from the photo detector. And how does it look like? It looks like noise. This is how it looks like. It's something I actually grabbed from the LIGO website from some spurious event. But this is S of T. You get a time series. When you sit there, you see all this, just the strain of your instrument, and this is time, and you know it looks like noise, right? So this is your output per detector, and so the output is the sum of this maybe signal and noise. So S of T plus N of T, and as I said, it's noise dominated. So with one detector, you cannot distinguish between the noise from inflation or just detector noise, unless it becomes signal dominated, but we know it's not. So here's what I said just in the equation. So with one detector, you can construct a 2-point correlation function of this data stream. You put in some filter, try to get rid of some noise, and you get this power, P squared. And you can do the same with noise. You build a detector, so you hope that you actually know what the noise is. So you can construct the same thing with n, and you get this thing called n squared. And you know, as I said, if n squared, which is less than, if n squared is more than p squared, then you have no signal. So one detector, if it's noise dominated, you will never see anything. So how do you get around that? Okay. So I'll tell you how to get around that in the next slide. But just come back to your question. Here's the noise of, so we've been talking a lot about noise. So here's how the noise looks like, just to orient you. So what is the contribution of noise to the detector? Well, you have stuff like thermal noise, shock noise, radiation pressure, seismic, somebody shouting, things like that. And this is for LIGO, and LIGO, here's this y-axis, and in the gravitational wave jargon, this y-axis is the square root of n squared of f. N squared is a function of f. This is the square root of the noise power. It has this weird unit, which is one of the roots hertz, just to make everything dimensional when you integrate everything. And here's the frequency. And you can see for LIGO, I think this is LIGO. This LIGO design. LIGO design is my peak. Yeah, okay. LIGO design is right here. You didn't actually show up. You see? That's a very faint line here. LIGO design is here.
Turn down the line?
Oh. Okay, so maybe you can see better. Can you see the dotted line here? That's LIGO design, and this is LIGO, I think, round 4 or something like that. So they are pushing down to the design.
Okay.
Good. Okay. So, and this is just the BBN limit. And now, as I said, lower frequency, if you have the same, okay, this is for LISA. So LISA designs that has a peak sensitivity at 0.01 hertz, but they have the same strain sensitivity, but almost, it's minus 23, it's minus 22 and a half, right? But LISA is so much better than LIGO because its sensitivity, its maximum sensitivity is actually at lower frequency. And as I said, lower frequency is always better. So
So where would inflation be on that plot?
This one, oh, way down here. You won't see it. Yeah, it's way down here. Yeah, this is LIGO, at least has no hope of seeing inflation. So, I think these are some spurious events. I just grabbed it. I don't know what dots are. Sorry. So, okay. So, if you have 3 points, then it seems these are noise, right? Noise, we know, is Gaussian, or most Gaussian. And you know the noise is the 3 point of the same, the 3 point of the noise is zero because it's Gaussian. And another thing is that noise is localized. You know, all this noise are, in some sense, instrument and location dependent. If you have two detectors, you don't expect them to be correlated. So in the sense that the cross correlation of the noise of two detectors, N1 and N2, is smaller than the total correlation. So this is the way that you use to beat down the noise. You cross-correlate two detectors and then just auto-correlate one detector. And of course, if the 3 point of the single detector vanishes, the 3 point of three different detectors will match. And this is the key point. This is how, you know, for this point, this fact here allows us to beat down the noise of a 2 point to get some power spectrum, even though the noise is much bigger than our signal. But for the non-Gaussianity, this is going to help us. I mean, anything that you're going to detect is really simple. So, you know, it's not that crazy. Okay, but I will quantify that. So, for power spectrum, let's say you want to cross-correlate two detectors, you know. So, if you have two detectors, you cross-correlate them, and this is the thing that you get. So, the cross-correlation of the signal and cross-correlation of the noise. Forget about that plot. I mean, this you're not ever going to see this. So, okay. this is actually Hanford in Louisiana. Never mind. You can't see anything. But okay. So you, what you do, your estimator, the thing that in your estimator is something you construct all your data, you have these two data, you put some filter, you integrate over all the time, or the time integration, and you get this thing called S1, S2. I just shrouded it with S1, S2. This is just, again, the nomenclature. And if you choose our filter carefully, if you filter is better than using noise, then the signal turns out to grow like T, total time integration. But the cross-correlation of the noise actually grows like square root of T, because it's random walk. We don't expect them to be correlated in any way, so they're just random walk. So then the signal of noise then is just goes like square root of T, right? So if you wait long enough, you read the detector, you wait long enough, and until you run out of post-op positions, then you will get a signal. You eventually get a signal. So for advanced LIGO, you know, the design for advanced LIGO, if you integrate for 4 months, you get a signal to noise of 1.65. This is the same. In other words, you get 90% chance of seeing something if the gravitational wave spectrum is 10 to the minus 8, which is about 6 orders of magnitude less than dot scale inflation. In other words, in LIGO, advanced LIGO, you're not ever going to see this. But you know, it gives you a sense of how people do these things, and how does this work, right? How does this work? Well, here's how it works. So, when you have a noisy thing, right? You have very very noisy. Sorry, this is gangsters. Yes. if you have many what you want is make the same measurements again and again and again and again in the same signal noise. So and then the effective signal to noise then just square root of number of measurements times the signal to noise per measurement. But you have detector sensitivity. Remember that the most sensitive power detector is about 150 hertz for LIGO, which means that it's 1 over 50 seconds. But this is much shorter than, well, this is like time, the integration time is much longer. So what you can do, you chop the integration time into little tiny pieces of about, you know, 1 over f star. So now you have n number of, and then you expect the noise to be uncorrelated across the chunks. It's just random walk. So then you can make n measurements of the same thing. And this is how you beat down the noise in the 2 point. And we're going to use the same technique to try to beat down the noise for a 3 point. And you know, to do this, you just have to choose a very clever filter. And the one you choose is that such that the filter has only support around f star. So this is how people do it in the 2 point. I have half an hour. Okay, so I got time. So So, okay, there are some subtleties in that, right? So you have two detectors. They have orientation issues and the location matters. So here's a detector data string. You know, here's a tiny picture of the noise. For every signal, it has contribution from sum of all polarization, sum of all frequencies, sum of all angles, you know, the amplitude of your gravitational wave times the detector tensor pattern. So so you have issues with orientation. You know, you might construct a detector in such a way that some gravitation will have no response. For example, if you are edge on your interferometer, then you have no signal. And again, if two different you have two different detectors, they are oriented differently and they have different locations. If you try to construct a signal, you try to construct a two-point correlation function. Remember, there's an e to the minus omega dot x the location. So you have cancellation effects. You know, you get different places. You have some oscillatory effects from the integral. So this cancel. So these two things combined, orientation and oscillatory, these are things that kills you. They reduce signal. And what people call this is the overlap reduction factor. The overlap reduction factor. Reduction means that your signals become smaller. And you don't have to think about omega f. This is just nomenclature. The reason I brought this up is because in the 3-point, you're going to run into the same thing. You're going to have pattern orientation effects. You're going to have location effects. So okay. So now, what is the expectation from 2 points? Here's the same plot again. For LIGO, as I say, you know, it's 10 to the minus 8. So advanced LIGO at 100 hertz, you're not going to see anything. You're not going to hit. Well, you're going to see something, maybe astrophysical sources, but you're not going to see inflation. LISA is better, it's 10 to the minus 12, and you're lucky, you know, you might actually see some neutron star mergers, but you're still not going to hit 10 to the minus 14 of inflation.
That's for R equals what?
R equals to 0.1 is 10 to the minus 14, actually. So this is super optimistic. This is a plot that's stolen from.
This is already rolled out.
It's already rolled, yeah. Actually, you should go actually further down like this.
Does it go below the tip of
BBO
then?
No, BBO is a paper experiment, right? So you can always kill whatever you want, right? So BBO is supposed to hit just to look for this. And BBO is designed to look for inflationary gravitational wave power spectrum. So
how does it scale? So like 0.01
square? Or 0.01 square? Oh, you mean like I'll show you the scaling later, actually. You mean the scaling of the signal to noise?
No, where are 0.01 square?
Oh, mean 0.01 hertz? This is 0.01 hertz.
No, R.
Oh, sorry, R 0.01 is 10 to the minus 14.
0.01.
Oh, I cannot remember. It's for gut scale inflation, all I know is for gut scale inflation is 10 to the minus 14. So you scale it the way you want. This is the future. This is like, you know, maybe 10 to 15 years of this time. But now, you know, like I say, you want to see, let's do something crazy. Let's construct a 3-point estimator just as an exercise. We'll see what we get. So use three detectors, right? You know, you want 3-point, now you need to cross-correlate three detectors. You can do exactly the same thing, S plus 1, 2, 3. You integrate over S1, S2, S3. And now you notice that all N1, N2, N3 vanish. They don't cross-correlate. And all you have is just really the signal, S1, S2, S3. The key point is that this is zero, and the autocorrelation of all 3 points also zero. So remember that in the 2 points, you need to go above the noise. You're trying to see beyond what is noise. But here, the 3-point itself doesn't have noise term. So it actually comes and helps us. It does help us a lot, but it helps us some. So what is the next leading order noise? The next leading order noise is then just the product of the power. If you take the 6-point of the noise and you recontract, the three point can vanish. So you only have this term. So this is your detector noise. So your noise comes from the 2-point noise, not the 3-point noise.
Sorry, you have to confuse. So noise, but there can also be stochastic backgrounds for other stuff that doesn't. Couldn't there also be stochastic backgrounds for other stuff like thermocosmic strings, something?
Oh yeah, exactly. This is exactly my point. You want to use this to try to figure out what those are. The stochastic, for me, all the cosmic strings, all the neutron studies are to me that's.
So here you're not trying to.
Yeah, no, no.
Inflation to other.
Right. Right, but inflation and all these astrophysical sources have different prediction of 3 points. So in principle, you can use that to distinguish between what's going on. So, I mean, basically that's my point. I mean, I'll get to that.
So I want to know, what's the definition of noise here?
Noise is just the variance of this thing.
The detector noise.
Detector noise, exactly, detector noise. So to me, anything that is not detector noise is signal. So astrophysical, black holes, all these are all
signal.
Cosmic string signal.
No, cosmic noise, right? I mean, like cosmic variance, in fact, which is not detector.
Oh, yeah, this is because we are looking at so many, because our frequency is so small, right? So we have so many modes, we are really not cosmic variance limited. Our frequencies are f-star. F-star is about 100 hertz, so we have many, many, many modes. We integrate over, that we are not cosmic variance limited here. You're not a CME, right? You have a limited number of modes. Here, uh-huh. You can integrate as long as you want. Because, and the modes is so tiny, you have so many modes. Here, noise to me here is detector noise. And signal to me is anything that has source, that is actual serious gravitational wave.
So how confident are you about this statement? Because I'm sure if you go and measure these noise in experiments, 3-point function is not exactly zero.
Exactly, good. They are noise, and there are issues with this. I mean, there are papers that people are trying to figure out how to correct certain non-Gaussian noise. I mean, I haven't done serious study on that. But I will come back to that, say that there's way that I think there's a way to actually characterize that using the 3-point, and I don't think that's been considered in the literature, and I'll come back to talk about that. Okay, I see. So now, you know, again, just like a 2-point, you chop out the integration time into m chunks. So then, you know, you're measuring the same object again and again and again, m times, and it scales like square root of t. So, you know, fortunately, you can just wait long enough to see the signal. Well, the question is how long, right? I mean, and I'll tell the answer. But before I do that, I want to show you what the approximation I did. Because this integral is kind of messy to do. So let's construct a 3-point estimator. So here's a signal given some theory. So here's a theory, here's a 3-point. And if you look at Monosena's paper, he wrote down a 3-point for inflation. So the tensor correlation is this. He wrote it down. And you have this complicated form. If you've seen this, then you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen this, then you don't have to worry about it. This is just I'm just telling you that you can compute this. Okay. So, and our estimator is this. So you take the tree data series, you find some very, very clever filter, you integrate over chunks, delta t, this per chunk, and then you get one measurement. And then you're gonna have n number of identical measurements. And for this filter, you know, we have to choose a very clever filter, right? So for this filter, I'm gonna choose a factorizable choice. This is not the most optimal choice, but this is the choice I can do, so I can do the integral. So here's this complicated integral here. You know, this thing, after you expand everything, you get this complicated mass. And I will go through that one by one, like this. Here, this is the signal. So you know, this is the 3-point, it's expected.
Can you go back? Shouldn't this be in Baryon-Hunter time translation? Because your filter is not, and you would expect the Bose filter to be in Baryon-Hunter time translation.
Well, the noise is not, right? I mean, it is in a sense in Baryon-Hunter time translation, as you're measuring the same object again and again and again.
But you're not, because it's different time, you can add the constant all the time.
Okay. This is not a good way to write it. I'll show you I'll do it in frequency space, it'll make more sense. So here's the expected signal. Here's the complicated thing that you write out after you expand everything. Here's your 3-point. So, you know, as we all know from non-Gaussian in CMB, this there you have to impose momentum conservation. So all the K modes have to form a triangle. You integrate over all angles of all frequencies because your detector doesn't know about directions. I mean, you can construct filters that allow you to get some indirection information out, but there's very recent work, a couple of years ago, people have been trying to do that. But we won't consider that. Again, you have orientation and relative location effects. You know, it's a 3-point overlap reduction. This, depending on which angle is it, this, you might not get one. And you have this oscillatory cancellation effects. And I've written this down in frequency space, and here's my filter. So my filter is very simple. Here, this is y-axis, this is WF, and this is just basically a box function that picks up frequencies around the maximum sensitivity.
So the last slide was not correct, but it's characterizable in frequency space, not in real space.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. But yeah. Okay. This is for writing a column last week. Okay. So you have this frame. So this is what you pick up. And because of this momentum conservation, you only select out certain triangles. So this is the most flat triangle you can construct with this filter. This is the most pointy triangle you can construct. So you can sort of like imagine the morphing this triangle with that triangle. And this is the support of the tree point that your filter picks up the signal. Everything else you set to zero because your filter is set to zero. So the key point is though that this is not zero. This integral is not zero because you have a set of non-zero measure. You pick up some set. If it turns out that your three-point correlation function from your theory is squeezed, then this picks up zero because you're actually picking up triangle that is closely equilateral. Okay, so this is not the most optimal filter. There's a prescription of how to get the most optimal filter out, but you have to do some numerical integration, which at the moment I don't have time to do that yet. I'm not sure it's actually worth doing, but here's this is not the most optimal filter. So this is what we're going to calculate, and you know, ding, the theory is that we want to do some drive-by estimation, right? You want something out quickly so I can give a talk at PI. So this is what I did. So you sit down and say, okay, I'm going to take inflationary power, the key point from inflation, and I'm going to hack it. I'm going to remove all the polarization information and just write down the simplest thing I can think of. I set the isotropic ideal detector. This never exists in real life, but okay, I said it would work. And then I set all the detectors to be located in the same place, which, you know, then the noise will be correlated. But no, okay, I'm just gonna make things easy for me. In principle, you actually can, for given detectors and their detector pattern tensor and given location, you can actually numerically integrate this. So you get some number of 0.1, 0.01, but okay. So then I choose this filter. So what have I done, right? So as I said, you can integrate this thing out numerically, and what you're going to get, which is what I call a shape factor. It depends on the shape of the true point and the shape of the orientation of detectors and the location of detectors. So what have I done? So I overestimated my signal because I assumed it was isotropic and co-located. So this will probably change the result at 0.01, 0.001. Okay, you know, we are talking about orders of magnitude here. I underestimate the signal by using a suboptimal filter, and I drop all the polarization sum. Here's your summing over all the A prime and A double prime. So that should be an 8 here. So that 8 combination of plus, 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 cross. So I drop that all there. So in a sense, you know, I'm doing some Fermi problem. I'm just hoping that the cancellations go even out in the end. So okay, but you know, it's good enough for now. So how long do we need to wait? Right? Here's the big question. So if you want to, how long do you need to wait before you get the 90% detection given some signal? Here's the mess after you plug it all in and you calculate everything, and here's the mess that you get. But forget about this mess. Just focus on this scaling information. So it scales like f star to 7, which means that if the frequency is lower, the peak frequency is lower, your times become smaller. So you want low frequency. Again, you know, it comes back, you know, keep saying that low frequency is good. So in fact, it's very strong with f to the power 7. And it scales like inverse of the energy density, the omega GW minus 4. So the bigger the signal, the bigger the energy density, the smaller the time. So again, it scales like minus 4. And it scales like, as I say, it scales like n squared to the power 6. It scales like 6 factors of n. So here's n to the power 6. To compare to the 2-point, here's how the 2-point scales, like the time of the 2-point scales like f star to the power 5. Again, you know, I just get factor of 2 or factor of 3. It scales like noise to the power 4. Here I got noise to the power 6. And it's omega GW over minus 2. So you're looking for a power spectrum. So we have this, how it scales like, this is a power spectrum. Okay, so lesson is again, lower frequency is good.
So I don't understand this. So
I'm gonna plug in some detectors information and see what we get. If it's too low, you're right. If you have a detector that can have very good sensitivity at f star is minus 0.0005, then you see these things. But we are constrained by our detectors. And I'm gonna do it right now actually, next slide. So what can we see with BBO and DeSigel? So these are paper instruments. You can search the net very carefully, and you might find some paper that have subplot. It may or may not be true about what this its future detector is. I mean, in a sense, these are just paper projects. People sort of play around with it and see what they get. So they are not real experiments. Well, we are not going to see even the power spectrum from gravitational wave, inflation with Lisa and LIGO. So you don't expect this to be the bias spectrum. So we can just forget about Lisa and LIGO. So here's the artist rendition of BBO and LIGO. For those who have seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of futuristic. So this is designed to look for gravitational wave power spectrum. And here's the same plot I showed earlier on. And here's inflation. And here's the red line is the three-year correlation. So this is the BBO is actually two sets of three spacecraft in the star configuration. So okay, it's crazy. But okay, so you correlate through six spacecraft together, and here's what you get. Right. So you actually dip below the most optimistic inflationary power spectrum that you hope from your theories. So this is BBO, and the important point was that the peak frequency is about 0.1. So this is where they're aiming for. Remember that LISA goes on to 0.01, and the reason is that because LISA just has longer arms. So I do not know why they actually, when they are probing, they're building this kind of paper instrument, they go up to 0.1 instead of 0.01. I mean, the natural place for me to do is 0.01, even lower, 0.001. But okay, I mean, I'm not, you have to ask Mr. Kawamura here. So okay, 10 to 24 years, not good. So this plug is in this guy's crazy, he can go out of time. So what do we need, right? So we can ask our question, what do we need to see the 3-point? So if you allow the design of an instrument, so what do you need, right? So remember, you want low frequency, you want low noise. So, okay, so you can design the enterprise. Here's the artist rendition of the detector I've just designed. And I now go down one frequency, right? So instead of 0.01, I go down 0.01. This is the LISA best frequency. So here's LISA best frequency. I beat the noise down to two orders of magnitude smaller, just two orders of magnitude. Okay, that's a lot, but that's true, right? Out of 20.
Compared to BBO.
Yeah. So 3 years, 3.6 years. So we just extend arms on the spacecraft, build much better lasers, higher spark. Then you can beat down the noise in 3.6 years. This is still a bit crazy, right? This is still not very interesting. So, but what about other sources? So if you even have something like LISA at 0.01 Hertz, but at the BBO sensitivity, so you're no longer improving sensitivity, you just move the arms longer.
No, how are you going to do that?
But
how do you look at LISA arm length and the BBO noise?
I'm making this up, right? I agree, I'm making this up. But
the reason they do BBO, not LISA arm length,
they have the same structure though. They are just three spacecraft with lasers shooting each other. It's just, I do not know why they actually don't design 0.01.
But it's the astrophysical noise. That's the part from, that's why you can do so well with BBO.
Right, maybe that's why they want to avoid all the astrophysical crap. Okay, astrophysical noise. I won't call it noise because it doesn't mean noise is
effective. But it's not crap, it's not inflation. If you're going to see something,
you're going to see something else.
Sounds like it's not going to be inflation.
Yeah. So you just and like for example, if you want to look at preheating, like Thorsten was saying, you find that for PEV scale inflation, the peak frequency is at 0.01, right, where you want it, and with a energy density of 0.10 to the -11, 7.8 years, not bad, like 10-year track time, this kind of spectrum is not just from preheating. If you just plug in like electro weak signature breaking, extra dimensions, Suzy breaking at TV scale, and all these processes that will generate turbulence will give you a spectra like this. And it all depends on the energy scale where this happens. And you can actually, my guess is that the first non-astrophysical source is going to be something like this. You're not going to see inflation for a while. So
I'm sorry, this was for the LISA frequency for BBO sensitivity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But it's a factor of 10 worse in F. So
it's like 7 worse. It's not 7.8, it becomes 7 times 10 to the 7 million years. So frequency is the key point is frequency is important. Don't because you want to avoid crack, you want to go down to higher frequency. That's kind of silly. So okay, but compact binaries, you know, like this is the white dwarf thing I wrote down. No, at the peaks at 0.1 hertz around here, at 5 times 10 to the 11 is 1 month. Right on, you know, then you go on a trip to Beijing, you come back, you see the signal. Right? So, you know, I think this is crazy, right? I mean, if you can probe the power spectrum, you can understand what's the non-Gaussian elements. And having said that, I actually have used inflationary shape to calculate all these things. But I don't expect it to be inflationary. I expect it to be some sort of a local shape. For local processes, things that are generated actively, I expect the sources to be more or less synced to the same location. So it's sort of a local shape. But having said that, nobody actually computed what the true point for this. It's kind of funny, right? I mean, you computed the true point for inflationary true point, but nobody computed a true point for astrophysical sources. What's up with that? Right? And nobody has computed this, of course. So you know, if this is 1 month, I think people should start computing. So, okay. So I have 10 minutes, and I want to just go off a tangent a little bit and say that maybe we have a, this is not true, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but maybe you have some test of generalizability using this collinear filter. And what I mean by a collinear filter is this. I choose a filter such that all the frequencies sum up to zero. So then you have this mode, you have this frequency, and you have this filter, and you have this momentum conservation of your three point, right? And then if this is massless, then k equals to 2 pi f. But you can convince yourself that the only triangle that this kind of filter is going to pick up is the collinear one, is this one, it's a flat one. And you can convince yourself that this signal is always zero, spin through is massless. And the reason it's massless is because you need the massless condition is because you need this to force the triangle to be collinear. So could we use this as a zero test on massive gravity? You know, build your detector and wait long enough. You know, eventually one day you see a yes or you see a no. So maybe, I don't know. I think this is interesting, but I'm still working on this. But if for the observers, if you don't believe in all this massive gravity stuff, apologies to Alberto, you can use this to characterize non-Gaussian noise of an instrument. You don't expect anything, you expect zero. So anything that you see from this is noise. So this is one way to be able to characterize the noise of an instrument. But okay. So I'm going to summarize now. So three-point correlation functions are powerful discriminant sources. We can potentially detect inflation in three-point next. I don't even believe this myself, but okay. Then we can detect, but I think I believe this, that we can detect astrophysical and non-inflationary sources with some tweak BBO recital. And maybe we can use this as some test of massive gravity. And I think I'm not that crazy. Right? I mean, maybe a little bit, but okay. So this is still work in progress. So thank you very much.
I didn't really understand your last slide.
Just this one?
So
you see that this Pij and K, they are hidden spatial derivative here, Pij and Pij prime. So if there are K terms here, you have to contract all these Ks with all this polarization tensor. But remember, they are tracer and transverse. So every time you hit a K, if they're all pointing in the same direction, then you cannot avoid killing one of the k's, and this will become zero. You just write down pij with ki delta ij, you know, all these contractions. I think I have the equation early on, but I skipped through it very quickly.
Isn't this true for if I look at the two-point, if I look at the gravitational wave, you're saying you shouldn't see it?
No, it's you shouldn't see a 2-point is not. Two-point because it's time derivative. It's hij dot.
I mean, you seem to be saying that you should just do degree, you shouldn't see a collinear mode, right? The graviton. You should say it's massless, so we only have 2 degrees of freedom, which, yes. I'm not sure what the 3-point gives you more.
The 3-point, well, what do you mean by give you more? I mean, this is non-zero if it's not collinear.
Right, I mean, there's the fact that the gravity is massless, and you constrain on every single correlation function, that they should all be ordered entities, essentially.
Okay.
They should all just. That's essentially what you're saying. This by ordered entities should vanish, and you can test this on every correlation function.
For 3-point, for 2 points.
If you measure, if Lisa measure a 2-point gravitational wave, then they should check that, you know, polarization is such that,
I just don't know if Lisa can actually extract polarization information. I'm not sure. If you can,
you're saying the 3-point gives you more information, or is better to test word identities than the 2-point?
I guess I'm not sure about your word identity.
I think you have shape information in the 3-point. I mean, in the 2-point, you're basically getting a scalar sigma. So you don't, I mean, it's like you're integrating out all shapes, whereas here you actually kind of explicitly have it in.
Well, 2-point has no shape, right? It's just one. It's a straight line.
So I don't see where mass appears in the shape.
Okay, so if you have mass, if your spin, this is the spin through particles, right? If your spin through particles is mass, then it's F 2-pi F plus equals to K plus N. If you have N here, then you can always you are not forced by this integral to go into this flat triangle.
Why is that Zelman Van Damme argument not clear?
Say again.
Well, you know, Zelman Van Damme and other people argue, right, that massive and massless for graviton is totally different. That's well already.
But that's if you don't include nonlinear effects. And
sure.
The arguments of nonlinear effects always are important as you
can use your effects. So.
Yeah, but I'm not.
How can this? I mean,
I'm not familiar with the argument. But what I'm just saying is very simple. If gravity has mass, it's spin to particles that you're testing has mass, then this will not be identically zero. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Why would you? I don't know.
So you have the F star to the 7th power, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So A. Noise power, I don't know how many power, if I go to, say, 4.5 point, right? But how does F star scale like? What's the
4.5 points? I don't know.
If I do 5 point, what's F star
power? I've never actually tried.
If it's much better than 2 point, then I won't be surprised. 5 point is better than 3 point, and so on.
4 point, I don't know. I don't think so. Because four
no,
point
I didn't say four, I say five.
Five, okay. see, okay. I do not know. I haven't tried to calculate the 5 point. But
you can get the power.
Let me see,
easy,
see,
right?
Okay,
the coefficient is difficult, right?
I think it's
the
F12.
Power.
I think it's 12. That's my guess.
Okay.
Because if you have 5 point,
right,
then you can construct a 3 and 2.
That's okay.
So the 2 is 5 and the 3 is 7. So it's plus.
Okay.
3 is 5, 12.
Okay. And the.
The noise will go slightly.
Yeah, the noise is easy, right? It's 10.
Yeah.
Omega GW, that should be what?
That should be, so it's 5.12345, so it's 8.
Right, okay. Something like that. Won't that, so if you plug in number, won't that be how much better? If it's F star, you know, you have 0.01 hertz, and then if you get, you know, 5 watt power, and then you get less power than the way it's here. Then, I mean,
so you're saying that
you can just simple scaling, you can see that if you know you should go to 11 point or something. I mean, right? I mean,
no,
simple scaling will tell you that
you need 11.
No, wait. The noise, this is 7, right?
Right.
And this is going to be 4 plus 6.
What? Which one? And
this is
10. Right.
N is 10.
Right.
Right. So this is 12. And this is gonna be 8 points, so it's gonna be 8.
Yeah, that's
so
what I'm saying.
Right. So you have to add this two up, right? Because these two are gonna combine.
Sure.
To right. This is that you're not gonna be able to see. I don't think you're gonna be able to see things by moving the smaller frequency, and you get better and better at 5 points.
No. I stay with frequency that 0.01 hertz, right?
Okay.
But I just said if I use the same number, you have. Does it go in high point, you know, reading out?
I'm just guessing here, because I think it's 12, right? So 12, and this is 4, so we have H. If it's 5 point, then it's 1, 2, 3. How many factor of H will I plug? This will be...
Oh, you get 4, that's a factor of 8.
8, so it's a 8.
Right.
So this is 10. So 10, so I get 4 extra factors here.
Right.
And 4 extra factors here.
Right.
So it's 10 extra factors. But I only gain by 5. I'm not sure I understand the question. Are you saying that I can actually get better signal?
I'm asking.
I don't think so. No. Here's 10 and here's 5. You lose by 10 here and you gain by 5. So you're not going to this scaling is not going to get better when you increase the the number of points.
I see. So because compared with 2 points, it's because you gain 2 power and you lose.
Yeah,
two
the
power.
2 points special because you have to go above the noise. Here you don't have to. You just have to the noise is because noise is just 2 points.
Right.
That's why there's extra health when you go to 3 points. But when you go to higher point, then this model scales so nicely.
But if you cross by the different detectors, then you don't even have a problem with 2 points, right?
You do. The 2 points, you
still n equals four.
This is when you cross.
N1, N2, N2.
But I don't see what if you cross by the different detectors, there is no fundamental difference between 2 points and 3 points.
So the reason that the 3 point gets better because you don't have an N1, the auto correlate 3 point correlation of the state detector.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have non Gaussian in your noise, the leading order noise would be N1 cube.
Eugene, that information contains your two formulas there.
Yeah.
Right? So you will noise you get 2 more power and omega you get 2 power and the F you get 2 power. And you say that's a gain. Right? Compared to the two formulas you have. That's a gain.
Well, this is always going to, I won't call it a gain in the sense that this always lose worse than this. Because, you know, you can always detect 2 points first before you can detect 3 points.
Yes, of course.
You're never ever going to see 3 points first and 2 points. So I won't say it's a gain. I mean, I say that it's just, you lose less. I think that's a better word. Okay. I mean, you're not going to scale, you're not going to get better. I mean, you're not going to get better with 3 points. I'm trying to say that you lose less. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so why don't we go to the last talk of the day, Sarah Kinzer, and let's thank Eugene again.